Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to LA Kings Road Talk Radio.
Road Talk Radio. I am your host, Scott Cahill, a.k.a. Hip Check. We're going to be spending the next hour or so talking about tonight's disappointing loss, yet another in a slew of many, as our Kings fall to the Pittsburgh Penguins 3-1. But we got a lot to talk about with the big trade, some questionable coaching maybe on the part of John Stevens, got Olympic hockey, and oh, so much more. And here to help me talk about it is L.A. Kings superfan, Mr. Augie Loya. Hey, Augie, how are you, buddy?
Need you ask. You can go back. Just go back to the last three games, and yeah, I'll save the sermon for the show. But yeah, just I'll tell you what. Drew Doughty's reaction when Pittsburgh scored that goal to make it 3-1. That's pretty much how I feel.
I think we all feel that way.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, right? For those of you that didn't see it, Doughty made a save in the crease while the net was empty, and then it came back out. And he got no help. He tried to dive across and stop Malkin from scoring. Of course, Malkin stuffed it in. Doughty gets up and breaks a beautiful Easton stick that I would have loved to have had, because I've got a Doughty stick and I'm thinking about retiring it. But instead, Doughty breaks it over the post, actually along the post, and busts it in half, and I cry because I was like, God, could have given it to me, bro. But yeah, so another stick dies in the hands of an LA Kings goal crease, and in this case, it's third string goalie Drew Doughty.
Absolutely, and once again, you know, I don't think anybody really expected the Kings to win this game. You knew they were really against the eight ball, given, you know, the Penguins are the defending Stanley Cup champs. And especially when you look at coming off the horrible Hurricanes game. But I think that's what's frustrating is that, I mean, the Kings shit the bed against the Hurricanes, the one team that they really had a legit chance to win. And then they bring up a great effort against Tampa Bay, and really not a bad effort tonight either. But once again, at the end of the day, it's all about the results. And, you know, we'll break down the first, second, and the third period and break it all down. But it looked to me like really there in the third period, Penguins really put the pedal to the metal. And at that point, that was really where I think they took advantage of the game and really took it in. Even though it was still 2-1, the Kings just could generate basically no offense at all. And so, well, once again, though, we'll break all that down here in just a bit. And you know, I guess let's talk about Fanouf. I thought he looked fine. I thought he looked solid. I have no complaints about his play and the fact that it bumped down Forbert into the bottom pairing position. This is where he probably should have been. I thought he played, I don't want to say spectacular, but I thought he was definitely solid. Your take, Augie?
Yeah, he played a solid game. It was mistake free, and he performed well against a team that the Penguins are a fast team. Make no mistake, and obviously they've got a bunch of superstars up there. I mean, you got Crosby and Malkin, two of the greatest players in the NHL right now, and they got complementary pieces that fit. And he hung with them, obviously. And I mean, this is a guy who hung with part of Ottawa last year in the 7-game Eastern Conference final. So yeah, I mean, Faneuf performed well, and he got acclimated. He fit in, and there was nothing he did that made me go, dude, what are you thinking? So yeah, he played solid out there. And then of course he also tallied up the only goal for the good guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're going to go ahead and break down our three stars and whatnot. As a matter of fact, let me go ahead and we'll give some stats on the game. We got it available now in the third period. It was Pittsburgh outshot the Kings 15-8, and that was not, you know, it's not a misnomer. They had clearly came out and did everything they wanted to do in the third. I was surprised that Andy Andreoff was getting as much time as he did in the final minutes of the game. Andreoff's play of late has been really, I mean, nothing, no complaints. He's been solid. He's made some great passes. You know, really, probably the best hockey he's played in quite some time, but good enough to him being out in the final 5 minutes of a one-goal game. What's your takes on that, Augie?
Another guy who's, I don't know, I guess that Bieksa punch brought out the offense and the offensive side of Andy Andreoff, because since that time, he's actually been contributing instead of just being out there as a plug. He's actually integrating himself into offense and creating chances, and as evidenced by a couple of really sweet passes during this road trip. And he even had a nice pass given to him in the slot, which he corralled, controlled the puck, fired a shot on net, and forced Murray to make a good save. So, yeah, I mean, kudos to Andy Andreoff during this road trip as he has proven himself to try to get the Kings into a spot for the playoffs. And who knows, maybe he's being motivated by the fact that he doesn't want to leave Southern California and the beaches in the afternoon, the fact that you can go to the rink, get out of your hockey gear and walk out to the parking lot in flip-flops and shorts, which, of course, in Southern California you can do, and you cannot do that in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Not that they were trained in Calgary.
Indeed, indeed. There you go. All right, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and before we get too far and start kicking the dog and bringing on some callers, let's go ahead and do our three stars right now while we're at it, because there was some notable performances, and Augie, I guess we had talked about this earlier, and we had talked about Andreoff himself maybe as being a potential third star, and I don't think we need to recap it, but you said it pretty nice. He made some great passes tonight. Other honorable mention that I wanted to give was really Kempe. He's really at this point, I mean, hard to rank, but I think really if you're looking for offense and consistent offense, even just a guy that can create, you know, take away scoring, take away passing, take away assists, all that, just a guy that can create, I think Kempe's leapfrog. I think when you're looking at the Kings roster now, I think Kempe's now what, a top five guy, maybe top four guy, really, when you look at the Kings scores and the players that contribute consistently. He's maturing by every game, and once again, I think that's his maturation is really, I think, in direct opposition to some of the other players that are really struggling right now. Go ahead.
You pretty much summed it up. He's really come into his own this season, and he got. It's amazing what confidence will do, and I see a guy who is playing a very confident brand of hockey, and he's out there discovering himself and contributing. And the most impressive, two of the most, I guess you could say, defining moments that I've seen from him, away from obviously the goal scoring, because I've said before this season that up to now, Trevor Lewis 2.0, which lefty Trevor Lewis, and that's not something that we really needed. What we needed was a guy that could find the back of the net, and he started finding the back of the net. But there are two things about him away from the puck that I saw that really impressed me about him. One was his physical presence out there and the ability that he does like contact and doesn't shy away from it. And that is something that is getting rarer these days. And despite the fact that he has taken a lot of penalties, he's gotten away from that. He's not taken nowhere near the amount of penalties that he did earlier this season. He adjusted to the new rules and the way that they're calling the game. But the big moment is when he dropped the gloves against the Rangers in defense of Trevor Lewis, and actually held his own with a tough guy from the Rangers. I think it was Smith, but I mean, he held his own there. And that really showed something to the boys in the locker room and gives a lot of credibility to his growth as a player as he rounds himself out. And I'm thinking that I'm really excited to see what happens with Kempe as he progresses in his career. And I think he's barely old enough to buy a beer about now.
Yeah, let's forget tonight he got an assist there on the on the Fanouf goal. But also, too, I believe it was there – was that in the second where he made that nice saucer pass? Very easily could have been a goal. Could have very, very easily been a two-assist night for him. And I think that's the other thing. You bring up a good point. As he's getting confidence and as he's growing, he's has the courage to make those type of plays where I think maybe a younger player wouldn't be able or, maybe wouldn't try it. But now that he's had a little success, you're seeing him be able to generate more offense and definitely in a bleak stretch of games here for the Kings, he's definitely been one bright spot. Let's go to our second star of the game, though. Without a doubt, no surprise here. We're going to go ahead and give it to Dion Phaneuf. Real stabilizing force there. Got the game the game's only goal for the Kings. Didn't have quite 10 minutes worth of ice time. Only had about 19 minutes tonight. I don't know if that was maybe John Stevens still wanting him to maybe acclimate a little bit more to the Kings game plan, or, I really don't know what the thought process was behind that, but, had really just a little bit more ice time than Derek Forbert, but you could see on the two-on-ones and things like that. He was you could see the pro, you could see him being a pro. You could see him being a guy that's been there and really knew how to make the play. And so very, very happy with the trade. And Augie, I guess to throw this to you, why do you think, do you think just agree because Phaneuf's on a new team, they haven't had a lot of practices, maybe he just didn't want to give him that much time or, it just seemed bizarre to me. I thought maybe he would have had at least over 20 minutes worth of ice time. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I listened to the Mayor John Hoven earlier today, and he made a very strong point that it's the Kings' goal to keep Phaneuf at around 15 minutes per game. So given that tidbit of knowledge that was put out there by John Hoven, it doesn't surprise me that it was only 10 because he's only had one practice with the team. And the other aspect of him is his status was up in the air up until near game time because they were trying to resolve the visa issue. And what that resulted from was the fact that even though he was already in the U.S., he was switching from a Canadian team to an American team. So that's why the visa paperwork needed to be redone, and that was the holdup. And they were really trying to get it done today or tomorrow at the latest, because if not, they wouldn't have had him for the weekend. They would, and then Monday is a holiday, so they probably wouldn't have had him until next week at the earliest. So kudos to John Solomon, who handles the legal affairs for the Kings and deals with this kind of stuff. And he must have learned – he must have had a few numbers that he got from the Torrey Mitchell visa debacle on a speed dial because they got it resolved before game time. And that was probably a last-minute switch. So now I'm not surprised by 10 minutes. I think that's good, especially if the goal is to keep him at about 15 minutes. Because remember, he's just about to turn 33 years old, and they're trying to preserve this guy's minutes for a playoff run.
Yeah, makes sense. Anyways, let's go ahead and keep moving forward here because we got our star of the game, star number one. We're going to go ahead and give it to John Quick. Who else could it be? 36 saves on 38 shots, especially there in the third period. Without him, it easily could have been 4-0, 5-0, or whatnot. He made really, really big saves tonight, and kind of a shame the rest of the team couldn't help him out. But he was stellar. Once again, he was big when he needed to be, and once again, Pittsburgh, 12 shots in the first, 12 in the second, 15 in the third, and once again, really, it was still only 2-1 with that third Penguins goal being an empty net. So, Kings, I think it's safe to say the Kings. Is it unfair to say the Kings are in disarray, Augie? Why don't you let's have a quick chat about that.
I don't think it's so much that – I don't think disarray is really so much the right label. I mean, it could be looked at that. That could be a perception. But I think that it's something that's plagued this team. They've been a streaky team the whole season. And what's happening right now is they are hitting a really rough patch during a time of transition. And I think this is where the absence of Jeff Carter is really caught up to them. And this is something where he would – the offense that Carter brings has been a huge difference. But on this road trip, they've had one true stinker of a game, and obviously that was the Carolina game. But it was too close behind the Predators game. So I wouldn't call it disarray just yet. But these guys just need some luck, man. I mean, and running into a hot Pittsburgh team tonight who. I think now this is their 10th home run in a row, defending Stanley Cup champions.
That is correct.
And Matt Murray playing well. He's playing really well, and of course you've got Crosby, Malkin. I mean, all the Kessel and all those guys out there that make life very difficult for any team visiting there. So, I guess on the flip side of this, it's a good thing that this tough stretch is not coming against the. Western Conference team, or even worse, Pacific Division team, because then that would be a time to think about disarray. Not just yet, but we'll see what happens.
You mean like the 7-game losing streak that actually did happen against the Pacific Division, which pretty
brought
the Kings to the rest of the pack?
Exactly. Luckily, they had built up a huge lead before them by feasting on the East. But even then, they're no longer feasting on the East. So this is just it's tough.
All right, hey, let's go ahead and do let's go ahead and bring on Larry real quick because he's been waiting patiently. Hey, Larry, how are you tonight, buddy? Hey, Larry.
Yep.
Hello, Larry.
I'm on mute. I was on mute. Sorry, Mike.
Hello? No worries. No worries, buddy. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's great to be on here. And I just, you know, this game was really tough. I thought that the guys really, I didn't really think they did that all that bad. I just think that they had a little bit of, with the Penguins, the way they are, they're just really a hot team to play in this. This road trip is really, really grueling on them. So, you know, with the team. So, with Dewey, snapping his stick on the post there, that's a pretty good indication of how the team is feeling right now. And I don't blame Dewey one bit.
No, I think, like I say, when we opened up the show, we are all Dewey in that
mm-hmm.
respect.
Definitely.
Because we all definitely felt that way. All right, well, sit tight, Larry. We're going to bring you back in just a minute because we have to talk about now, this is the unpleasant part of our job here, but we got to call some players out tonight because there was just a couple performances that didn't sit well with us. There we go, the toilet flush player of the game, and... we got a couple candidates tonight, and Augie, why don't you go ahead and start with your candidate that we talked about earlier on defense. Rough night for Alec Martinez.
Yeah, he. This was probably just a clunker of a game against a team that you really can't afford to have a clunker of a game against. I'm not sure what his plus minus was out there today, but it's not even about that. It's about ending up in the box. And he got, I mean, one was, yeah, it was kind of a ticky-tack call, but that's just the way they're calling it this year. So it's not really a ref you suck moment kind of thing. But what it comes down to is Alec Martinez knows better. It's one thing to get caught out there one time with what he was given, but the second penalty as well. And that took away offensive time from the Kings to be able to get out there and try to mount some kind of offense, because these are very this is a very tough team to try to build offense against. And Martinez just he did not have a good night. And so, yep, he gets to be the tidy bowl man today.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing, too, that I was noticing, man, his passes just were not there tonight either. They had the accuracy on the headman pass, that first outlet pass, so critical to get that offensive, the transition game and really get into the flow. And it just was not there. So definitely a rough night. One of the other players, too, and really two that are really struggling, Pearson and Toffoli. Both of them minus one. Martinez was a minus one, but Pearson only has 10 goals on the season. I think we all expected much, much more out of him. And while Toffoli's still, one of the team leaders in goaltending or goal scoring, just once again, it's just the consistency is just not there. And especially tonight too, they just were bottled up. They weren't able to create anything, which really. Once again, I think with those guys not being able to create anything, you know, it makes it a very one-dimensional team, because now really you can just stack your top defensive guys against the Kings' number one line. And in this case, Kopitar's so valuable defensively, you know, there's some times where you're going to have to match him up against Crosby. So I think with those guys not performing, it really compromises the entire Kings' game plan to an extent where it really makes them a one-dimensional offensive team. Go ahead. What do you think, Augie?
I think it's been the lack of consistency on the lines for those guys affecting them. Wingers are very particular about who they play with and who they form chemistry with, and they just have not been able to have a good mix out there this year. I mean, it comes in spurts, and it's not like they're hot garbage. I mean, don't get that wrong, but you are correct in calling them out for, I mean, this is a time where you need these guys to rise up and at least create scoring chances. So it's not like they're hitting posts. It's not like they're getting robbed. They're barely getting any shots on the net. That's been the big concern. And I mean, that reared its ugly head in the game against the Hurricanes when the Kings got outshot, what, first period, some crazy number like that.
Yeah.
You've got to start finding the net, and maybe this is a matter of these guys pressing and just trying to find perfect spots instead of just playing the game. And that's where leadership comes into play to kind of rein these guys back in and such. And we'll see what happens in regards to that. But yeah, they have to step up. They're no longer kids. They're veterans. Yeah, they need to step up.
Exactly. And both underperforming. And also, too, I mean, when we point to that Carolina game, you know, sure, Toffoli scored, but really at that point in the game, Carolina had such a huge lead. Carolina was just basically going into their prevent defense, really, at that point. So, I hope we, in these final games in the road trip, Buffalo, Winnipeg, Chicago, I hope we can get those guys going again, or at least show us something, because their play, I think, really, really hurt the team. And once again, really, really helps the opposing coach when it comes to line matchups. And once again, when you're on the road, that home coach gets that last line change. And so I think without them scoring, yeah, it definitely hampers their ability. Larry, what were your thoughts there on Toffoli and Pearson?
Absolutely spot on with what Augie said. You know, these guys are just need to really hone in on their craft and just start playing like veteran NHLers, because that's what they are. You know, these guys have not, you know, are not the the upstart, you know, couple of guys, you know, players that were there, you know, from Manch or anything like that. They, you know, were, you know, where they were playing, you know, in like they were in 2014 or wherever. You know, I mean, they just are not coming together the way they should. Pearson is especially with only 10 goals. I mean, seriously, he should be around, you know, at least 15 or 16 by now. You know, this is
yeah.
just a key part of the game where he needs to focus on. You know, and the Toffoli, I'm not sure if it's really the, you know, his shots, you know, shot locations that he's going with or where he is on the ice when he's taking these shots, but he has just been losing feel for where he is in his offensive awareness. I don't know where he is right now.
Yeah, I agree. And even tonight I was watching him. He looks like a guy that's kind of lost his game. You know, he doesn't have really the confidence or really even know. It looks like maybe he's second-guessing a lot. Are you kind of seeing that as well, Larry?
I think so. I mean, I think he's maybe overthinking it. You know, we've been talking about that today in training at my work. I'm not getting away from that, but anyway, as far as overthinking, you know, where he is and what's going on, he may not be, you know, he may not have had the confidence lately. I mean, especially with the team, you know, where they've been playing lately, I think it's just filtering over to everybody. So in this situation, you know, it's really a tough feeling right now. But if they can get in, if they can march into Buffalo and start playing the way they've been playing, you know, with the shutouts they had in Dallas, especially in if they play the way they did in Dallas, that would open up a lot of opportunities for them, and to try to just right some more wrongs that they've been having lately, that would help them a lot.
Yeah, indeed. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but when we take a look at the scoreboard, and let's go ahead and hit the scoreboard right now, Flames beating the Predators right now, 3-2, 11 minutes left in the third, not good. Capitals 3, Wild 1 in the waning moments. Yeah, I guess that has some effect as far as that wild card slot goes. But the other critical game right now, Ducks in Chicago, end of the second period right now, tied 2-2. So if the Ducks win this game, if Flames end up winning that game, in addition with the Sharks actually playing the Canucks tonight at home, this could really be a catastrophic night for the Kings, really, with this loss, with the Carolina loss, with every other team in Pacific poised to gain points on them. Realistically, at the end of this night, they could be five points behind the Sharks, three behind Calgary, and if the Ducks manage to win, Ducks actually leapfrogging the Kings to actually have 66 points, basically leaving the Kings in fifth place in the Pacific. So once again, catastrophic night. In that regard, if that scenario plays out. Other little bits of news for you guys. As far as Ottawa, you might want to ask, well, what happened in that game with the newly acquired Nick Shore and Marian Gaborik? Well, Marian Gaborik actually scored a goal, believe it or not. Yes, Marian Gaborik scored a goal. Kind of funny, too. What do you think the odds are, guys, where you have a trade like this? And let's just boil it down to Gaborik for Fanouf. But what are the odds that each one of those guys would score in their first game on their new team? Let's go ahead. Augie, give us your odds, and then we'll give Larry his odds.
I would say that, the fact that Gaborik wasn't a scratch, that was one obstacle that was overcome. The other aspect of it is that he's just not been consistent at all this year. So, yeah, I'd say there were some pretty long odds. And given that Fanouf hasn't seen double digits in scoring for about, I don't know, since 2012, and the fact that he got a goal tonight, yeah, I'd say the odds were pretty long. I would, if I was in Vegas, I would have given you 45-1 and lost my ass.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Anyways, Gabrick actually finished with a goal and an assist, had the game-tying assist with just 31 seconds left. And Ottawa actually goes on to win in overtime against the hapless Sabres 3-2. Speaking of healthy scratches, Jordan Nolan, healthy scratch there for Buffalo. Gabrick's line on the night, what are the odds of that? How great would it be if Jordan Nolan got traded for Nick Shore at the trade deadline?
Oh, my God. I would go in the streets. I'd buy a plane ticket to Canada and celebrate on Jeff's front lawn.
Gabrick, 18 minutes of ice time. Jesus, when was the last time that he had 18 minutes on the Kings? So, boy, maybe, I don't know, maybe Gabrick will make things good. They give him a boatload of ice time, and maybe he could rekindle his career, and good for him. 18 minutes of ice time, 2 points, game-winning assist, or game-tying assist, I should say. Nick Shore, only 8 minutes of ice time. 3 of 8 in the faceoff circle. Pretty much another typical Nick Shore night there for him. So there you go. There's your breakdown of our former Kings in that game. So, Larry, before I keep moving on, did you have anything else that you wanted to say?
Well, about Gabrick, I mean, it's funny that he was able to leave his you know, his I don't know, was is a fixer up for at home, and, you know, bring his Ferrari out for this game. I guess he wanted to show his new team what he was doing, what he was able to do. But yeah, that's crazy. I wouldn't have expected him to actually score anything the rest of the year, the way he's been playing. So, yeah, good on him.
Calm down,
absolutely,
folks.
Absolutely.
The Sabres without Jack Eichel.
Yeah, and hopefully that same Sabres team will appear on Saturday when the Kings play against them. Going to be an early matchup. We're going to be on the air following the game once again, and you folks in the West Coast, going to be a 10 o'clock matchup because it's an early game. So get up early, get your coffee, get your Egg McMuffin, and watch the Kings play Buffalo. And once again, be interesting to see if the Kings – hey, look, if the Kings lose to Buffalo, do we wave the white flag? I mean, really, let's be honest. If they lose to the Sabres without Jack Eichel, at that point, should we just wave the white flag and blow the whole thing up? Go ahead, Augie.
No, it's an Eastern Conference game, West versus East. No, absolutely not. They've got a lot of head-to-head matchups coming up near the end. And after this trip back home, and this is their longest trip of the season, as we all know. So no, absolutely. You don't wave the white flag. I mean, you can make up ground. That's all there is to it. If the rest of the way, we hardly had any Pacific Division matchups left. The only one that really harms us is the fact that we don't get to play the Sharks anymore. We're done with them. And that part is harmful because we can't do any 4-point swing games with them. But no, a loss to Buffalo, that isn't wave the white flag time, in my opinion.
Oh, dude, I disagree, man. If they lose to, once again, a shitty team without their best player, a team that's, you know, maybe arguably going for the number one draft pick, clearly one of the bottom three teams in the league, I'm just kind of surprised. Like, if they lose to that game, dude, I'm gonna think this team is in serious trouble. And at that point, I mean, you know, crazier things that haven't happened, Doggy, and I love your faith and confidence. And you're absolutely right that there's still a bunch of games, but geez, if that happens, dude, I will doubt our ability to do anything the rest of the season. Larry, where do you weigh on? If for some reason the Kings lose to the Sabres, I mean, really, where do you lie on the rest of the season?
It's hard to tell, really, because, I mean, hey, the Sabres are the Sabres, you know, and without Jeff Eichel, or Jack Eichel, geez, what am I talking about? I'm thinking of Jeff Carter, hoping he'll come back someday soon. Well, Jack Eichel out, you know, that's, I mean, this is not as powerful a team without it. Well, but he still has a good clout as far as leadership is concerned. But I don't. I got to go with Augie on this one. I'm sorry. But I just think that with the way that the team is playing, that if they just tried to right themselves, you know, and just work as hard as they can, in Buffalo, because they are pissed right now. They have to be, with the way they played today, or tonight. But I think if they play well in Buffalo, that's great. But if they lose to Winnipeg, which I kind of expect them to be honest with you. I'm a Kings fan, but I'm also a realist. And I think they should be able to beat Chicago too. But it's a toss up. It really is for the rest of the year. We'll see what happens at the trade deadline, really, because that's where it really is. But other than that, I think that the team really has to buckle down and start playing some serious hockey lately, in the stretch.
Yeah. Wow, serious hockey. Are you busting out the team motto from 1998 there, Larry? Kudos to you, my friend.
Yeah, this is Kings hockey. That's what they should be playing. They haven't been lately.
Yeah. Do you remember that, Augie, the serious hockey era of LA Kings?
I try to. Yeah, I remember it. I recall it. I was there for that that nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was also kind of in response to the Ducks, their marketing campaign that had Tinkerbell and all that crap at that time, too. So, but let's be honest, when the Kings come back from this road trip, you're absolutely right. They are anticipating that Jeff Carter is going to resume practicing with the team. You're going to be looking at about February 22nd will be that first home game versus Dallas. And at that point, you're really looking at, I don't want to count these up, but about 15 games left. And let's be honest, this is not an easy schedule because once they come back, you got Dallas, which once again, you get Jeff Carter back. How long is it going to take him to get hot? For starters, you know, he's basically, this would be his first game of the season, almost a preseason game, really, when you think about it from the length of time he's been out. And Kings play Dallas good, but Dallas actually ahead of the Kings points-wise and now actually have a better plus-minus goal differential above the Kings as well, whereas earlier, even in the midpoint of the season, the Kings had, the second or third best goal differential. So now Dallas has caught them up there. After that, you have the woeful Edmonton Oilers playing just horrible hockey, but once again, still got Connor McDavid there. While that team sucks and is horribly coached, can't really say anything. But after that, now we have a home-and-home against the first-place Vegas Golden Knights. Once again, that's always, it's still strange to have to say that. The first-place Vegas Golden Knights back-to-back. That's not going to be easy. After that, Columbus, Chicago, yeah, probably a good chance they could win those. Washington in town, you never know with Ovechkin. You got St. Louis. That's going to be a tough one. After that, here's probably going to be their easiest stretch in that next period. Is after St. Louis, you got Vancouver at home, Arizona on the road, Detroit at home, Jersey at home, and then one more road trip that sees them going to Minnesota, Winnipeg, Colorado, and Edmonton. So I don't think it's an easy stretch at all. I mean, you got a couple gimme games in there, but for the most part, I think this is crazy to say, but I think you almost got to pray that Carter can come back and hit the floor running and try to spark something because they're just digging themselves a hole. And I realistically just don't know how, would it be great to go on a run? Absolutely. I mean, we're going to need it. And we've said it before too, the team that gets hot in those last 10 games is a team that can always go far in the playoffs. We've seen it when the Kings won in 2012. We saw it, the Predators last year. So we almost are waiting for Jeff Carter to be the savior. I guess the good news is that he can do it. The bad news is that we're kind of throwing all the bags that Carter's going to be the guy that's going to make a difference. And I know I'm just rambling right now, but go ahead, Augie. I've said a lot. You have your turn in the spotlight.
Well, it's like we discussed the other day. I don't think Rob Blake is done tinkering with this. And really, I mean, these guys are just trying to play to get into the playoffs. And once you get into the playoffs, make a run. So they're not going to blow things up. And I think that Carter coming back is going to give these guys a boost. And you just never know where that other boost comes from. And do these guys have a run in them? Absolutely. They totally do. But once again, they have to get out there and actually start getting 2 points. And it's the games against in the Western Conference that are going to matter the most. I mean, yeah, you have to beat you've got to get points against Buffalo. You got to get those 2 points because they're there and they're gettable, they're winnable points, and you got to get those. Tonight's game, I was hoping that they would at least have a tie game, go to overtime with 1 point in hand, and then hopefully get the bonus baby. But that didn't happen. So now on this road trip, which started out very promising with a really good win in Florida, a solid performance, gutsy performance against Tampa, which if they didn't start out so slow, they could have gotten a point there at the very least, but they didn't, and they end up losing 4-3, and then the stinker in Carolina. And then tonight it was a 3-1 final score, but really the game was close the whole way. So tonight was an even game, but we'll see what these guys do and see what they build off of that. And like I said, the one thing that I do read with this team, they haven't given up yet. I mean, Doughty getting up and breaking his stick, that's done because that guy cares. That's done because that dude is just like he knows that they're capable of more, and he's not giving up. I mean, that breaking a stick right there is done because of his passion for the game. So I'm encouraged to see that, because if he just would have walked off hanging his head or just done nothing or just like, ho-hum, another loss, then I think that'd be more concerned. I think that'd be more disconcerting. The fact that he went out there and displayed some emotion, displayed some frustration, might be the thing that lights the fire under somebody's ass that needs to be yelled at.
Yeah, yeah, no, all a really, really good point there. Hey, we got some updates. Not good. Flames currently ahead of the Predators, 4-3. About 3 minutes left in that one. Still 2-2. Ducks versus Chicago, and the Sharks game really just underway right now. So we'll see what happens there. Hey, well, let's go ahead and switch gears, guys, because I was watching. I was really enjoying the women's hockey, the U.S. versus Canada last night. Really, guys, that might have been the funnest women's game I have ever watched. Even though the U.S. lost, what a damned entertaining game that was. And I'll be honest, I don't watch a lot of women's hockey just because my time constraints doing everything else, with my band, the Hired Gun Trio, who just happens to be playing Saturday in Dana Point, shameless plug. But fantastic game. Did any of you guys watch it? Augie, did you watch it? Larry, did you watch it? And let's go ahead and start with you, Augie.
No, I did not see it. So, Larry, take it. You rock groupies in Dana Point, Hired Gun Trio, is looking for groupies. So make sure if you're a groupie and you want to see some Hired Gun Trio, make sure you go there to watch them play. All right, go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, no problem. I didn't see it either, really. But I've always had a real admiration for the women playing. They really know how to play. They've had some really good success. You know, Haley Knight and Alex Carpenter, Megan, Dugan. Yeah, Megan Dugan on the team. I mean, they really know. They really are a passionate group there, and they know how to play. And they've shown it time and time again. They really are good. I hope they play a lot better in the, going into the tournament.
Yeah, it was a really, really close game, and got some bad calls that kind of went against them and whatnot. But it was just a preliminary game there too, so I'm sure they are going to be back playing against them again at some other point. So very entertaining, though. If you guys have not watched it, the women's hockey was fantastic. Also note that it's pretty much streaming nonstop on NBC Sports. If you have the NBC Sports app, which is completely free, you can watch all of those games. And really, they're showing all different ones, so you can watch, you know, not just the, you know, USA and Canada, but they are really showing all of them. So it was just an entertaining game, and I'm pumped now. I kind of can't wait to watch the rest of the games. As for the USA, have you guys watched any of the men's hockey at all?
I haven't. Yep, I was. I've been working for 6 days straight, and my busy schedule, unfortunately, I don't get to watch that much television aside from LA Kings hockey and the NHL hockey that I invest my time in.
Yeah. I haven't. Evidently, actually, the men's group is playing right now. It looks like. No, you know what? Slovakia, 1-1, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe the Kings actually, or the U.S. team actually lost to Slovenia. If I'm not mistaken, unless I'm looking at an outdated. But,
yeah, they did lose.
We'll take a look
at
that.
They did lose to Slovenia.
Okay,
yeah.
And it was Slovenia, right?
Yeah, it was Slovenia or Slovakia. Okay, so, one of those
yeah.
S nations.
Yeah. Well, and also too, I would like to say, you got to think, like, I got to think that Russia's got to have the best chance of winning this, just because, once again, the KHL athletes are allowed to compete in there, whereas, you know, because the NHL's going, you're not really seeming the premier, you know, to give you an idea of that, you know, Brandon Wisniewski, or James Wisniewski, you know, is on the U.S. Olympic team, and on the Canada team, I believe it's Brandon Kozin, former Kings draft pick, is on there. So I just look at because hockey season is in midseason here, you know, and once again, I think in Russia trying to, you know, prop up their country and always have a good showing. I mean, they've got, you know, Datsyuk, they've got Voinov, they've got Kovalchuk on that team. So you got to think that they got to probably be the team to beat in the Olympics, without, once again, just me going off on the top of my head. So before we go ahead and wrap this up, let me go ahead and see if we can get any updates from.
Well, I'll give you an update right now. I'll give you an update right now. I'll give you an update right now. I hate the Chicago Blackhawks. Unbelievable. They were up 2-0. They were up 2-0 on the Ducks. And within, I'm not kidding you, maybe 5 minutes, the Ducks tied it up 2-2, and now Henrique has given the Ducks a 3-2 lead because their goalie couldn't stop a puck that was rounding the boards in the net. He missed it, and then the Ducks turned it into an offensive opportunity, and Henrique buries it, giving the dreaded foul from Anaheim a 3-2 lead with 11 minutes and 15 seconds left in the game.
Gotcha. And
One job. That's all we have.
Turning into a catastrophic night for the Kings here. In other words, though, Gabe Vilardi played last night, had just one assist, but I think he's had points in every game, and I think he's now got 38-17 or something like that. Pretty good night in the faceoff circle, though. 11 of 18 in the faceoff circle, so pretty good. Yep, there you go. But Gabe Vilardi, once again, the talk of the junior leagues. Right now, once again, 36 points in 18 games. I think he scored in almost every game. So good for Gabe Vilardi. We'll probably be seeing him maybe on the big club next year. So, all right, guys. Well, up until Saturday, we will talk again. Larry, thank you so much for your call. You have a great night, okay?
You too. Thanks for having me on. Yep. Thanks for sharing the airwaves with me, Augie. Have a great night, guys.
Yeah. Hey, have a good one there, Larry. Hey, Hip. There was one thing we didn't talk about. Oh, by the way, are you pressed for time?
What's that?
Are you pressed for time?
No, go ahead, buddy.
Oh no, the one thing we didn't. One of the things that that we didn't talk about. I mean, we talked about the lack of production, but what we didn't talk about was, what are the Kings' options moving forward as far as a player movement or as you had, when we were discussing the idea of perhaps trading Tanner Pearson.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I was listening to the radio broadcast on my way home from work this afternoon, and they had Josh Cooper breaking it down, and, of course, John Rosen actually covering the Olympics, so Josh Cooper following up in his footsteps, and they were talking about how Rob Blake was not done and looking to maybe get some offensive help or additional offensive help, and that kind of got us thinking. The underperforming Tanner Pearson versus maybe just making a straight-up trade for a Michael Grabner. I mean, Grabner, I believe, is an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year, and we will go ahead and get Pearson's contract here in a little bit too. But once again, Tanner Pearson only 10 goals on the season, where Grabner, I think, has about 24, if I'm not mistaken, 24 goals on the season. And once again, we'll look at his contract, but let's go ahead and talk about that, Augie. I mean, would you roll the dice on a guy? I mean, you kind of think that, Pearson now, he's not an unknown commodity. He's not a rookie. Do you think maybe that he is what he is, and that's all that he's ever going to be? Do you think that there's more in there somewhere? And furthermore, do you think maybe it's better to open up a roster spot, knowing that maybe a Gabe Vilardi is going to be taking that step next season? So what were your thoughts about that?
I don't think that helped the Kings at all. Grabner has, he's 30 now? He's 30 years old. He will be an unrestricted free agent. So you're renting him. Pearson is under contract for, I think, 3 more years at around 3.5. So it's either 3.2 or 3.7. So I'm just rounding it down to 3.5 in the middle.
Yep. 3.75 is Pearson's cap hit.
Okay. 3.75. And so you're going to give up the certain, and Pearson's coming off a 5-goal season last year. I don't think you give that. No, absolutely not. You got a guy who took a hometown discount on top of that in order to stay, because that we thought there was no way that Blake was going to be able to re-sign both Pearson and Toffoli. And I think doing that before Jeff Carter comes back, you're shooting yourself in the foot, because you're giving away a guy who is on the rise. I mean, 14-15, he scored 12 goals, follow-up 15-16 with 15 goals, 16-17, 24 goals. So this year I was hoping to see around 20 to 25 goals from him, just to be consistent. And you're talking about a plus player on top of that. I mean, the guy this year so far is a +9 on the ice. And Grabner, he's a plus, let's see, what is he? He's +10 this year. He's got 23 goals so far, but this is a guy who also last year he scored 27 goals. So how much more can you expect out of him than the expectation is on Tanner Pearson?
But the elephant in the room is, once again, you got Doughty one more year left on his contract before he's an unrestricted free agent. Do you think freeing up $3.75 million in cap, couldn't that almost be the difference between you keeping Doughty and trading him, knowing Doughty right now is what, $6 million, $7 million, his contract? Like, literally, if you dump Pearson's contract, now you have the extra cap space where you actually might realistically be able to retain Doughty.
Well, here's the flip side of that. If you're dumping another piece of the another piece that makes that cupboard look bare, because Doughty doesn't want to come to a team that looks like it's rebuilding. He's not going to want to resign. Remember, the key word of this is he's a free agent. He's free to choose wherever he wants to go. And if he's looking at being surrounded by the Ontario rain, he might, yeah, you know what? All right, I'm good. I'm out. It's been real, folks. Got two cups for you. I'm going to go explore and see what other opportunities are out there. So remember, this guy, he wants to win cups. He doesn't want to be playing or rather babysitting Ledoux, Vilardi, Gravel, McDermott, and so on and so forth. So you've got to have something in the cupboard for him to come back to
And then on
yeah,
top
but
of
I,
that
I
too,
think...
I mean, to what? Here's the key question: how much money can the Kings realistically spend on Drew Doughty without becoming what the Chicago Blackhawks are right now because they're stuck in those contracts with Taze and Kane?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on there. I mean, he makes $7 million right now, so you know you make $7 million. Realistically, how much more can you give without just once again wrecking the entire team? I mean, I mean the numbers kind of mind-boggling to me. Is that really as an unrestricted free agent? Do you have any doubt that Doughty will probably get $10 million from some team?
I think some team will offer him $10 million. It's just a matter for him. Is it worth it for him to go? And not just when I say worth it, I'm not talking about just monetarily. I'm talking about quality of life, happiness, the fact that this guy can go anywhere in Southern California and walk around in peace without being hounded or put under a microscope. I mean, he gets to be under the radar out here, and he gets to go home and visit Canada during the off season. And he spends the majority of his time living out here. So those are things that come into play. I mean, is the extra money worth sacrificing your happiness? And I mean, at some point, I mean, this guy, how much is his contract worth, the duration of this contract? What will it be worth at the end? Is it like $35 million or $28 million or something like that that he's made through this contract
yeah.
that he's currently on? That's a lot
yeah,
of money
correct,
at some
right
point.
In that ballpark.
I mean, yeah, I mean, at some point, you're kind of going, all right, yeah, I mean, if I stay with the Kings for another $35 million, I think I'm okay. I mean, you know, how much cash is that to burn through? And who knows? The other thing, too, is that Doughty recently got engaged. And how would his wife feel about moving to some other spot in God knows where? Let's just, because everyone says it's Toronto. I mean, would his wife be happy living up there? I don't know. Or his soon-to-be wife? We don't know. I mean, those are the hidden factors. And who knows what with the Fanouf in the locker room with him now, if he's asking him, hey, okay, what was it really like out there being under the microscope of the Toronto media? Is it that bad? What's Fanouf going to tell him? I mean, those are all things that come into play here that are hidden factors with this. So, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, too, because you probably know more than me here. So Doughty's just got married or whatnot. Is his spouse, you know, is she a Redondo Beach, Manhattan Beach? You know, is she a girl that was raised in this area? Because you kind of saw, too, that Southern California girls from that area typically don't like going to cold weather climates. I think the transition for a South Bay girl going to a Canadian city, once again, with that type of the microscope going all the time, really, I could understand why that's got to be challenging as hell and why people wouldn't do it. And it's not just me that's heard this before, right? I'm not floating any bizarre theory. This is kind of known as a hockey axiom for Southern California, right, Augie?
Yeah, it is. And you got to keep in mind that about a year and a half ago, Audi dropped $6 million for a two-parcel property in the South Bay, like a 3,900 square foot house. I guess the home there was like initially three housing units, so like 10 bedrooms, five bathrooms, 3,900 square feet of space, just around the block from the Strand. So, I mean, he's invested money in property and being out here. So it looks like, I mean, this is a guy that put money down here for a home. So that's pretty significant, in my opinion, at least. But I don't know much about his fiance, because the information that I had is a little bit outdated, because I know he was dating a girl that was actually Canadian, his Canadian girlfriend, but supposedly I think they broke up, and to be honest with you, I forgot who he got engaged to.
Okay, fair enough. But all food for thought, and it'll be interesting to see what happens, and we will be here on Saturday Saturday lunch with LA Kings Road Talk Radio. What do we think? Does that have a nice ring to it, Augie?
That has a really nice ring to it, for sure.
Bust out the Wonder Bread, bust out the Oscar Mayer bologna and a little bit of Miracle Whip, and have a good time with a can of Pringles and listening to LA Kings Road Talk Radio. So, hey, I'll tell you what, Augie, let's go ahead and wrap this up. But we haven't done this in a while, and I think nobody did it better. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up with a little Sammy Hagar weekend, and Augie going to go ahead and count us out. The floor is yours, my friend.
All right, everybody. In celebration of the fact that Jaromir Jagr, the man with the 80s mullet, is playing in the Olympics, pull out your mullet and raise it high. Make it something that makes you happy. Flip in the go back to the days of KNAC and KLOS and KMET and get ready to enjoy the sights and sounds of not being able to drive 55 as we have Sammy Hagar weekend.
Some pot, more some coke, and then drive.